Hello, everyone. It's good to see you all again. There's a very small crowd in the room tonight for a Sunday night. And let's see, was it last week? I knew we had a small crowd because of the Super Bowl. I got that. But actually, we had more people last week than tonight. So does this mean, since it's Valentine's Day, does this mean everybody has a hot date? Is that what's going on, I wonder? Is everybody out with their sweetheart? I went out with my sweetheart last night because we knew that tonight I would be here for the Seven Steps to Awakening. Plus, after the Seven Steps to Awakening, I have an Awakening Together board meeting. We have quarterly board meetings, and tonight's the night. So we played Valentine's Day a night early. But we had a really nice, sweet date last night, so it was a lot of fun. Tonight, as we do the Seven Steps to Awakening, we are going to begin with, quote, 705. So I am posting a link to my journal entry for 705 in the room. And I will start by playing a song just so we can all kind of be still while the music's playing and get in the heart and get ready for whatever this teaching is going to be tonight. Let's see, where is my music? Here's my iTunes. And well, here's a good song for Valentine's Day. I'm going to say this is dedicated to each and every one of us by Mr. Joe Cocker. It's called You Are So Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful song. And it reminds me of NTI in NTI Luke. In fact, let me just grab NTI and read it to you, assuming I can find this really quickly. Hank probably has read this recently because he's going through NTI Luke. Okay, this is NTI Luke chapter 3. And it says, that right near the end of chapter 3, it says, do not look at Jesus' baptism and see him as special in comparison to you or others. Look at his baptism and realize Jesus was baptized with others and the same as others, in the same water and by the same one. For Jesus was baptized as one Son of God. It was of this one Son that it was spoken, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." These words are spoken of you. Read these words, listen to them, take them into your heart. Accept them as true of you as they were of Jesus, for there is no difference of any kind. So that song, "You are so beautiful, you're everything I hoped for," right? That's very much like this. "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." And, you know, and we still have that big unworthiness belief hanging over our head. Really, it seems to be hanging over our heart. It's sometimes hard for us to accept that. How could it be true? "You are so beautiful. You're everything I hope for." You know, something in the mind says, well, not everything. I fall short somewhere. There's no way I'm everything that you hoped for. And same thing here. "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." Well, not me, the unworthiness thought says. But both Joe Cocker and God are saying this is true of each and every one of us. "You are so beautiful. You are everything I hoped for. You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." And there are no exceptions to that at all. That's amazing. So happy Valentine's Day. So as I mentioned, we are here now for the 7 steps to awakening. And we are going to begin with quote 705, which comes from the Yoga Vasistha. Of course, right now, quote 705 is coming from the 7 steps to awakening, step 3. And this is the quote. "The true self is not affected by the body, nor is the body in any way related to the self." I laughed halfway through that. Some of you may have heard the joke, but this morning in the Awakening Together gathering, isn't that what we were looking at? This morning in the Awakening Together gathering, while we were doing those little exercises, I called them, we were looking at the body, noticing that we were the looking. Notice I didn't even call it the looker, right? We were the looking, and the body was an object. And so although the body could feel pain and we could see that, we practiced that. Remember, we practiced pinching our fingers and actually creating pain. And we saw that the body could feel pain, but we saw that we, the looking, did not feel pain. And that seems to be what this quote is also saying. The true self is not affected by the body, nor is the body in any way related to the self. Another thought that comes into my mind, I was just talking a moment ago about that unworthiness thought that most of us have. Unless it's been healed, most of us have this thought. I call it the I am bad thought, as you know. And the mind tells us there's lots and lots of proof that we are bad or unworthy, right? Not as good as others, lacking in some way. And for many of us, that proof, or some of that proof anyway, not all of the proof, because the mind can come up with so much proof, but some of that proof that I am unworthy is attached to the body, right? If the body does not meet some idea of perfection, if I'm too fat, too skinny, too hunched over, too old, you know, what else? Too sick, too wrinkly, too bald, right? There's just so many things that if I'm that, if the body is that, then the mind will point to that as proof of my unworthiness. Too black, of course. Thank you, Dolores. I didn't think of that because I haven't had that experience in this lifetime. But absolutely, I can be too black. And you know, sometimes you can be too white. If you happen to be in an area, for example, where there's a lot of Native Americans, you can be too white as well. Of course, you can be too Native American. You can be too Asian. You can be too whatever, right? Too American. If you're in the right, you know, in the right places, we can be too American. So yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of proof, right? I mean, everyone, even though I can't see you, that's ever had the mind point at the body in any way as proof that you are unworthy and not as good as others, raise your hands. And I'm assuming everybody that's hearing my voice right now has their hand up. We've all experienced it. Oh, Lori. Lori's putting her hand up in the room even. She's waving her hand. Yeah, absolutely. You know, definitely. The body is one of the things. The body is one of the things that the mind uses as proof. Well, listen to what 705 says. The second half. The second half, right? The first half, the self is not affected by the body. Right, we saw that this morning when we were in the Awakening Together gathering. But listen to the second half, because this is also true. Nor is the body in any way related to the self. So what you are is in no way affected by the body, by the skin color, by the size, by the wrinkles, by the too much hair on the body or not enough hair on the head or you know, whatever the story is, the fact that the body is not healthy, whatever the story is, where the mind is trying to make some kind of a connection between what you are and the body, and because of the body, the mind is trying to tell you that you are not good enough, it's just not true. And in fact, I feel like listening to Joe Cocker again, because I think Joe Cocker has the truth for us. Actually, Christina Aguilera has a good song, too. Since we've already listened to Joe, why don't we listen to Christine? Let me find her. Let me find her. So everybody, just look in your memory at the things that the mind has told you that you are not worthy because of dot, dot, dot. And then listen to Christina Aguilera. Don't look at me. That's how we feel, right? Don't look at me. The ones in our own head, right? Our own thoughts, our own self-judgment.
You are.
again from NTI Luke chapter 3. You are my son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased. And as I mentioned, the words that tell us the most that we are unworthy, that we are ugly, all of that. You know, we may hear some of that from others. It's true. But for the most part, we hear it most within our own minds. But let's just go ahead and talk about the fact that there may be someone out there once upon a time, maybe even today, that is telling you that you aren't good enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not smart enough. You're not stylish enough. I used to hear that. I wasn't stylish enough. I remember how that brought up my unworthiness. You aren't white enough, Dolores. Dolores isn't white at all, you know. So she's definitely not white enough. You know, whatever it is, right? Whatever it is. I'm going to go ahead and play one more song. I guess it's Valentine's Day. I'm in the mood for music, maybe. But while I was listening to that last song, this song came up. And this has been a favorite song of mine for a very long time. Maybe some of you know this song and like this song, too. I think I've probably, with at least a few of you, sang it before at a conference in New Hampshire. The name of this song is How Could Anyone Ever Tell You? And it's by Karen Drucker. So let's listen to one more song and then we'll move on.
How could anyone
the quote that brought on this montage of music says, "The self is not affected by the body, nor is the body anyway related to the self." And of course, that led me to talk about how the mind will often point at the body in some way as proof that we are less than, proof that we are not good enough. But one thing that was nice about the Christina Aguilera song, she didn't just talk about the body. She also mentioned what you do and what you say cannot keep you from being beautiful. And, you know, how many of us, again, I think we can all wave our hands, how many of us have done things that we think have made us guilty or unworthy or less than? And how many of us have said things that we think make us guilty or unworthy or less than? You know, the mind has so much proof, not only what we look like, but what we say, what we do, even what we think, right? What we think makes us unworthy, guilty, less than. And none of that is true. None of that is true. You know, all of this started also with Joe Cocker saying, "You are so beautiful. You are everything I hoped for." And then from N.T.I. Luke, "You are my son whom I love. With you I am well pleased." I'll tell you a little story. I think probably many of you know that I started what I called Writing with Holy Spirit in November of 2004. And it wasn't too long after that. I'm going to guess probably around March of 2005 when a message started to come. And the first three words of the message were, "You are perfect." And as soon as I heard, "You are perfect," I stopped writing because I thought I must be listening to the ego. I thought the Holy Spirit would never tell me that I'm perfect. You know, that I'm working on perfection. I'm hoping to be perfect someday. This is why I'm on the spiritual path. But the Holy Spirit wouldn't lie to me, I thought. The Holy Spirit wouldn't lie to me and tell me that I am perfect now. So that must be the ego. And I quit writing. And a couple months later, the way I remember it, you know, my memory's a little bad, so it might not have been a couple months later. It might even have been a couple years later for all I know. But it seems like it was a couple months later when I was writing with the Holy Spirit. And again, those words came, "You are perfect." But before I could throw down the pen and run away, the next sentence came. Listen to this. "You are perfect. To trust these words is to trust me." Me meaning the Holy Spirit. And I happened to have a purpose at the time. My purpose at the time was to learn to trust Holy Spirit fully. Fully. And so if those words were saying, "You are perfect," to trust these words is to trust me, it really meant that I couldn't throw the pen away. Because if I threw the pen away, I was saying, "I don't trust Holy Spirit." So I had to begin to trust that I am perfect. However, I also had to begin to ask, what am I and how am I perfect and all of that. And there's a lot of messages that came, before I finally accepted that I am perfect. And the beautiful news about that is that you are also perfect. You know, when I say I am perfect and accepting that in the way Holy Spirit wanted me to accept it, to say I am perfect and you are perfect is the same thing. It's, you know, Regina could not be perfect and somebody out there be imperfect. That wouldn't be perfection. So when I finally accepted that I am perfect, I was blessed with eyes to see that everyone is perfect, regardless of what they look like, regardless of what they say, regardless of what they do, and regardless of what they think, right? That we are perfect. And we're perfect in brief, I'm going to say, for two reasons. Very brief. We're perfect for two reasons, not just one. One reason that we're perfect is because of what we really are, which is what this quote points to. The self is not affected by the body, nor is the body in any way related to the self. Right? So the self is not affected not only by what the body looks like, but the self is not affected by what the body does, what the body says, what the body thinks. So the self is always perfect, right? And you are the self. Not the body, personality, mind. Therefore, you are perfect. However, that's not the only reason you're perfect. And this is really important. At least it was to me. Because when I accepted that the true self was perfect, but I was still strongly identified with the body, mind, personality, it still somehow left me imperfect. I remember the message that came that at least began to turn the tide. And it's a message called the flow. Some of you may be familiar with the flow. What the flow showed me was that the body, mind, personality is a creation of all of us together. That all of us together are like writers writing a script. You know, you could think of us as like writing a TV series. And we write out characters. We give these characters different qualities, different idiosyncrasies, just like we would if we were writing a TV script, right? We wouldn't make all the characters the same. We would make them different. We would give them different, what people call strengths, and different, what people call weaknesses, different quirks, different habits, and different roles. We would have, as they say, cops and robbers, right? We would have both, because it wouldn't be a very interesting story if you didn't have all of the different roles, right? And so what the flow taught me is that this person, Regina, this personality, is written by all of us, just like every personality is a character written by all of us. And all of us is God, is the creator, right? And so to judge the creation, I also judge the creator. And this wasn't shown to me in a way where then I felt guilty for judging the creator. It didn't enter my mind in that way. It entered my mind and sparked a willingness to stop judging the creation, because I did not want to judge the creator. I wanted to love the creator. So just like the Holy Spirit, you know, kind of tricked me by saying, you are perfect. Oh, I think the actual words were, you are perfect. To trust these words is to trust me, something like that. Just like Holy Spirit got me to let go of throwing the pen away by saying, wait a minute. If you trust these words, you're perfect. You're trusting me, when I wanted to trust Holy Spirit. Well, the flow helped me to begin to let go of self-judgment, because I wanted to love the creator. And if I'm judging the creation, you know, Regina, then I'm also judging the creator, all of us, right? So I began to accept Regina as a character, as a made-up thing that has strengths and weaknesses and qualities and idiosyncrasies and a role to play in this story. And what's interesting is I've come to accept, of course, all people, right? The false part of the person. I accept the truth of the person, which is the essence that we all are, the isness that we talked about this morning. I accept the truth of the person, but I also accept the temporary nature or the falsehood of the person as a part of the play, as a part of the script, as something that we have all written together. And it's funny because if you watch, this becomes so obvious that it's true. You know, watch, for example, the people who are running for president right now, like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, who else have we got up there, and all those other folks. Watch the impersonators, the comedic impersonators impersonate them. And watch how well they can impersonate their mannerisms and their words and their way of speaking. Each personality, and this includes you and me, has a limited way of being because it's just a character. And that's why people can impersonate us. If we were unlimited, they'd never be able to get it, right? They'd never be able to capture it. But because the personality is a written character, it can be impersonated. Somebody can watch us for a bit, study us for a bit, and then impersonate us. Jasmine loves to impersonate me. Danielle used to love to impersonate me. Right? So, I came to accept and love the personality as a character. As a character. So, and it's a perfect character, even if the character's role is liar and thief. Right? It's a perfect liar and thief. It's perfect. You know, just like we give Academy Awards, right, for people playing all kinds of roles. In fact, I think the Academy Awards might be next week, so we might have another light night here in the sanctuary. But, you know, we give awards to people who play these roles. You see, every one of us, until we learn not to, until we start learning that it is just a role and we don't have to play it, we play our roles perfectly. Now, at some point, as we begin to awaken, we begin to realize we don't need to play that role. We begin to realize that we can abide as our true self, and the role starts to fall away, at least to some degree. To some degree, the personality still stays, and another role, maybe a more enlightened role, and a more enlightened way of being is given. But you see, even the most imperfect of personalities, I mean, pick the one that everybody would point at and say scumbag. Look how well they play the scumbag. You see, it's all perfect. So we're perfect in truth because of our truth. And we're perfect in falsehood because of how the falsehood comes about through all of us, through our connection. So it's impossible not to be perfect. It's impossible not to be perfect. And when you accept that, it changes everything. It changes the way you see yourself and the way you see everyone else. You can even make what are called mistakes. Correct mistakes, laugh at mistakes, whichever. But it doesn't budge the insight that you're perfect. You're not perfect because of how you look, because of what you say, because of what you do, because of what you think. You are just perfect. So the quote, which I may have strayed away from a bit, but that's okay. The quote, the self is not affected by the body, nor is the body in any way related to the self. So let's see what I wrote in the journal. The interpretation, I am the body, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. The interpretation, the body is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points towards self-realization. Maybe I didn't stray as far away from the quote in the journal entry as I thought. First of all, this morning, for those of you who were here for the Awakening Together gathering this morning we very carefully looked with direct experience and saw, at least those who were willing to try the exercises with me, get out of the mind and do the actual looking, we saw that we are not the body. We are the looking. We saw that the body can be in pain, that the body can have an experience, quote, positive or negative, but that we are the looking. So we learned through our own direct experience this morning that the body is experienced, but I am not affected by it. The message of the flow that I talked about a little bit ago did the same kind of thing for me. It got me looking at the personality and watching how the personality is, whether the personality was being right-minded or wrong-minded. And noticing that I was the looking at the personality, just like this morning we were the looking at the body. And in fact, every now and then, if you're around me a lot, you might even hear me refer to Regina as Regina, because sometimes I am so detached from her opinions, her actions, that I refer to them as her. I refer to them as Regina. I can talk about what Regina wants and what Regina doesn't want without talking about me. Because I'm the looking. I often think of this world as a movie, but it's kind of a four-dimensional movie experience. In addition to the 3D world that we see here, we have the fourth dimension, which I'm going to call the inside-the-skin experience. So inside the skin, you know, you have thoughts, you have emotions, you have bodily sensations that happen inside the skin. And the only person who gets to see the inside the skin movie of Regina is me. Regina is my seat. She's my seat in this four-dimensional theater. And each of us has a seat. It's a skin suit, but it's a seat in a theater. And you get to watch this world movie from that point of view. You get to see the thoughts that this character has about, let's pick something common like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Obama, President Obama. Right, you get to see what this character feels when something happens in the world or something happens in the family. So it's a very intimate seat in a four-dimensional theater. But it's still just a seat in a theater. And by paying close attention, like we did this morning during the Awakening Together gathering, by paying close attention to who you really are, by noticing that you are the looking, that you see the body, you see the words that come out of the mouth, you see the thoughts that show up in the mind, you see the emotions that move through the body, by continually noticing that you see all of this experience, you become more and more and more aware that you are the looking. Not the character. The character is a part of the movie. And it's your seat. And as you become aware that you are the looking and not the character, at least in my experience, I'm going to talk about my experience now. There's a fondness that can arise for the character that is not vanity. It's not like the type of fondness one would have for me. It's like the type of fondness one would have for a beloved character in a book or in a movie. You love the one you're with. You love everyone, but this one you know the most intimately, right? So this is the one you get to enjoy the most. This is the one that this is your seat. So you can have a fondness for the character without identifying with the character. You can begin to laugh at the character. One thing that I love is the laughter that happens when the, quote, mistakes occur that at one time would have resulted in that feeling of unworthiness. Because before it would have been me and my mistake and, oh, there's more proof that I'm unworthy. And now it's the character doing whatever the character is doing. And it is funny. And it is funny. And the character is delightful. Seeing the character is delightful is so much better. It's a better experience is what I mean by that. Seeing the character as delightful, regardless of whether she's winning or losing in the moment, being happy or angry in the moment, you know, seeing the character as a delightful character is so much better than seeing it as me and taking everything she does so seriously and having the ups and downs of approving of myself and disapproving of myself, thinking I'm skilled at something and thinking I'm terrible at something. Laurie, I know, is experiencing this to some degree. I don't know to what degree Laurie experiences this, but I know she experiences it to some degree because she talked about how she wanted to be a singer and how she never did because she was too afraid. She called it stage fright, but if we were to drill down in that with root cause inquiry, we would find it was stemming from the what I call I am bad thought. I'm not as good as others. I'm unworthy. And if I get on that stage, you know, that may become everybody's knowledge. Right? They may all see that I'm not good enough in some way, so I better stay away from that stage. That's stage fright. But she talked about how since she's been on this spiritual path, how that stage fright has gone away. And now she can go and sing karaoke, right? What's happening to some degree, and I don't know enough because I only heard a few minutes of what she said, but what's happening from some degree is she's beginning to back up from the character. The character is not me. Laurie can probably get on stage, be singing with the karaoke, make some kind of a mistake, wrong words, hit the wrong note, something, and laugh now. And still like Laurie, right? Every one of us has a beloved character. In fact, why don't you do me a favor? Will you do me a favor? I want you to take your hands, put one hand just below one shoulder and the other hand just below the other shoulder so that your arms are crossing over your chest. And give yourself a big hug. Hug that character that is your seat in this movie. And say to the character, you are our son. Because remember, we all create you. We do this together through what Buddha calls interdependent co-arising. We all create you, not you by yourself. You don't get any guilt or credit alone. We all create you. So hold on to that body. Squeeze it tight. Give it love. And say, you are our son, whom we love. With you, we are well pleased. Let's try that again. Let's change it just a little bit. Give yourself a big hug for all of us. You are our son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased. Pause for a moment and really look at the character. Go ahead and let what you might call a weakness or a fault arise into your memory about this character. Remember that every character is written with different qualities and idiosyncrasies. Remember that it is a written character and not what you are. And yet, it is your seat in this 4D movie, your ride in this experience. Hold it, squeeze it. You are our son, whom I love and whom I'm grateful to. With you, I am well pleased. You are so beautiful. You are everything I hoped for. How could I ever have told you that you are not a miracle? Thank you for this experience. All right, let's go ahead and go back to Joe Cocker now. Look at the character and listen to Joe. Look at the character. Without this character, you couldn't have been in this movie, watching this show. What a wonderful gift.
You are so beautiful. To me, you are so beautiful. To me.
gratitude for that character.
You are so beautiful.
So gratitude for that seat in this movie. Can't hit every note perfectly. Yeah. And you know, don't forget that all of the other quote people in your life are characters too. And don't forget that we write them. That character is playing out the role we've given it to play. And also don't forget that's the falsehood, that's the movie, that's not the reality. That the isness, the life force, the awareness that is untouched by everything that character says and does is the reality. That's the essence that we all are. In fact, since we're into playing songs tonight, let's do another song. Let me set this one up for you. This song is called You Can't Fool Me by Resta Burnham. And in this song, she's looking at a character who's playing a role, right? The character is playing the role of complainer, not happy with the world, not happy with what people say, not happy with what people do, not happy with, you know, her own body, the complainer. And she's looking at the complainer while the complainer is complaining. And she's saying, you don't fool me, or you can't fool me. You are the Christ, right? So looking beyond the character to the truth. So let's listen to Resta. This is a fun song.
You can't fool me. I know who you are. You think you are hiding and safe in the dark, but I've got your number, can't mistake your light. You can't fool me, you're the Christ. You pretend to be normal,
I'm just ordinary,
with unusual eyes.
This is a hard world we live in.
Someone little and frightened,
I do the best I can, but
who just wants to survive. But I've seen the glory.
Who, me?
Behind your facade. Such love and such power.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Comes only from God. You can't fool me. I know who you are. You think you are hiding and safe in the dark. But I've got your number. Can't mistake your light. You can't fool me. You're the Christ. Your mind wears a body.
I sure wish I could lose some of
this. And pretends it is you.
Seems like there's never enough time to exercise.
Maintain and protect it.
And also my knees.
Is all that you do.
But I guess that's part of it.
But I've seen the glory.
Glory?
Your spirit can't hide.
Glory's an extra day off.
So tender and holy. Must be divine. You can't. what you are. You can't fool me. I know who you are. You think you are hiding and safe in the dark. But I've got your number. Can't mistake your light. Christ.
Yeah, so let me just look at the journal entry one more time and wrap this all up in a nice little bow before we all go. The interpretation, I am the body, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. And I will add to that, the interpretation, I am the person, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I am stupid is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I am a hypocrite is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I am ugly is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I am beautiful, meaning more than others, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. I am smart, meaning more than others, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. Again, I am this person. I am this body. I am this personality is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. The interpretation, this body is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points toward self-realization. The interpretation, this person is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points toward self-realization. The interpretation, this mind is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points toward self-realization. And don't forget that both are beautiful. Both are perfect, the true self and the character. All right, thank you everyone, and happy Valentine's Day.